As you know, Ken House, our chair from the last meeting, has left the commission. The commission was not nominated officers as of yet. And so I had communication earlier with the commission. I'll let you guys know. I'll be starting this meeting. I'll take roll really quickly. And I was going to ask the commission to select a temporary chair to act through the course of this meeting until we get to the point we can do officer nominations. I do have some handy notes for the person that rises to the occasion, so you're not totally on your own. But at this point, I'll go ahead and take roll. I'm not going to use this because it seems kind of strange. So Commissioner Chase, here. Commissioner Elquist, here. Commissioner Granfield, here. Commissioner Jensen, here. Commissioner Ray,
here.
Commissioner Schlesser, not here. Commissioner Steele, here. Commissioner Williams, here. Commissioner York, here. Commissioner Buffington, here. And Commissioner McClintock, here. At this point, I'm going to invite the commission to discuss selecting an interim chair. We do have later in the agenda, per the bylaws, a scheduled discussion for nominating the two officers, the chair and vice chair. At this point, I would invite the commission to discuss or encourage one of the members to come forward to conduct this meeting for the course of the design review, and then we can return to the business of the actual final slate for nomination. The bylaws do allow the commission to appoint or select somebody as an interim measure. In the past, when we've had the chair and vice chair not available in a meeting, we've had the senior members by term would normally take the place, so I'm just as the conventional process we usually use. And if I'm asked, I can tell you who the senior members of the commission are.
Gray-haired.
I would encourage Duke York to take the helm. I'm not sure if he's the senior member in terms of service, but I think that he would do a good job, and I would recommend him.
I would think that Mr. Steele would be an excellent person to take the interim chair.
I'll defer my nomination to Mr. York.
Anybody else?
I fully support that idea.
Mr. York, would you
go for it,
be willing to
nominate?
All right. All right. Thank you.
So I think I seconded Commissioner Buffington's nomination.
I do.
Well, we don't
have to take a vote.
Okay. Well, with roll call called then, so we'll take the staff off.
Yeah, I think you're
going to
start.
Could we just go around and so that I was not here on the 18th, and there's a couple of other commissioners here that I'm not familiar with, and so if everybody could kind of introduce themselves and say just a small piece of who they are and why they're here, I'd appreciate that. Chris?
Hi, my name is Chris Granfield. I live in the North Slope of Tacoma. Looking forward to working with each and every one of you and doing what I can to help.
What background do you come from, Chris?
Retired from the military 4 years ago after 20 years. And then the last 4 years I've been based out of in Europe and then in the East Coast at Washington, D.C. doing consulting and subcontracting work with the Department of Defense.
Okay, cool.
Well, for the benefit of the new members, yeah, maybe we can just go on the line and announce ourselves.
My name is Ross Buffington. I represent the Wedge Historic District on the commission. The Wedge has been a historic district now for 2 years or so. I am retired from the federal government. I worked for the General Services Administration and operated various federal buildings throughout the Northwest, including over 20 that were on the National Register of Historic Places.
Marshall McClintock, and I've been on the commission representing the North Slope for about 3 or 4 years. I can never quite remember how long. And I've been on the board of the North Slope Historic District neighborhood organization for about 10 years. And prior to moving to Tacoma, worked at Microsoft.
I'm Jeff Williams. I'm a realtor and a real estate investor here in town. Moved here from Pasadena, California. Was involved with the rehabilitation of a lot of historic properties in Pasadena. Have done the same since coming here. And a previous board member of Historic Tacoma. So looking forward to serving.
My name is J.D. Elquist. I've been on the commission for almost a year. I'm the vice chair of the Tacoma Arts Commission and serve as the liaison between Landmarks and the Arts Commissions.
Jonna Jensen with BLRB Architects. As an architect, I have a vested interest in historic properties, and that's makes up most of my workload is doing historic public works.
I'm Dan Ray. I've been on the commission about a year and a half, I guess, and I'm also on the board at Historic Tacoma. I moved to Tacoma 7 years ago, and I live in the Central District.
I'm James Steele. I'm an architect. I live in the North End. I've been on the commission for about a year.
I'm Katie Chase, and I'm an architectural historian with Artifacts Consulting, a local historic preservation firm. And so I live and work in the Stadium District.
And our newest commissioner has just joined us. Lisa, you want to say a little bit about yourself?
Yes, hi. I'm Lisa Schlesser, and I've been in Tacoma 3 years. I'm an architect by training, and that's about all I have to say.
Welcome. And I'm Duke York, and I've been on the commission for a few years now, I think three, and my company is a general contractor. We do residential renovation from hanging a screen door to custom homes, and I've been operating in Pierce County and with north and south of there for a lot of years. Okay. We have a consent agenda, and we have anybody?
No absences.
No absences. No minutes from the previous meeting for us to approve tonight, so double up next meeting, I guess. 2A is 615 Commerce Street is our first item on the agenda. I believe we have some people here. Mr. Navarro?
Hello.
Could you read your report first?
Sure.
Commerce Street.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is 615 Commerce Street, which is in the old City Hall Historic District, and this is the old city police stables on the annex to City Hall. The building was constructed in 1907 and rehabilitated in 1983 as offices. The building fronts both Commerce Street and Pacific. First floor, which opens on the Pacific Avenue, is currently being renovated to hold the Pacific Brewing and Malting Company brewery and tasting room. The application before the commission was the installation of a new solid wood swing-out door in an existing opening to replace a non-historic wood roll-up door. And I think if the commission is looking at the packets, you'll see that's the door that is currently in the space. The new door will be in keeping with the traditional stable door configuration and is visually similar to the original door, which staff has also provided the 1907 elevations of that. The existing door dates from the 1983 renovation. The requested action is approval of the removal of the non-historic door and replacement with the new solid wood door. The Secretary of the Interior standards that staff recommends for this are number 6. Deteriorated historic features shall be repaired rather than replaced, where the severity of deterioration requires replacement of a distinctive feature. The new shall match the old in design, color, texture, and other visual qualities, and where possible, materials. Replacement of missing features shall be substantiated by documentary, physical, and pictorial evidence. A staff analysis, the City Hall or City Hall Stables and Annex building is a contributing structure in the Historic District, and thus changes to this building require Landmarks Commission review per Tacoma Municipal Code 1306.447. Item 3, the proposed door is more consistent with the historic character of the original building and appears generally consistent with the proposed 1907 design plans on file with the city, and on that basis, staff recommends approval of the application.
Mr. Navarro, you read the application. Is there any additional comments you'd like to make about
No, sir. Actually, one comment other than the fact that we are trying to bring back the historic feel of the building. And that is going to, those doors are going to serve as the main entrance to the brewery and the tap room for the public. So a garage door that's existing there isn't really friendly for retail customers. So this will allow easy access for our clientele.
Very good. Discussion. Anybody have any comments on the commission?
I have a question about the transom. What are the materials?
So the transom is existing. It's part of the original design of the building, and it's glass and wood framed in mullions.
It looks like you've got divided light in the proposed drawing.
Pardon me, can you repeat that?
It looks like you have a divided light transom in the... Oh, okay. So it's just a bad picture.
It's just a bad picture.
They're divided now. Okay.
And there was divided on the original.
Correct.
As well. And the glass on the doors is true divided light
as well. Yes.
The door and the frames, is it intended that you're going to paint them or stain them?
No, it'll be stained.
It'll be stained. Well, what material are you?
We are using some reclaimed timber from Washington State. I don't know the species of woods, unfortunately.
Okay. But reclaimed.
Reclaimed, yes.
Okay.
And the reason why we have those recessed panels on both sides is because to keep in line with building code that the swing of the doors can be no more than 48 inches, so that opening is larger, so it's an 8-foot opening, or 11-foot opening, excuse me.
If it is a wood species and it's stained or treated, the only suggestion I would have is that the panels... that the wood grain would also run vertical. Oftentimes you see when they just use a plywood material or something like that in the recessed panels that it's run horizontal, and traditionally would have been a vertical because it would have been a full board. So if you end up using some type of veneer material on the recessed panel, that the wood grain goes vertical.
Thank you.
Other than that, I think it looks very appropriate, very similar to the original, and I think that the concerns about the size of the door based on code considerations is something that has to be taken into account, and so there's no reason not for us to approve it. I might have to recuse myself, though, because I plan on being a customer. Is that true or not true?
Any other comments or questions?
Well, off the subject of the door, are you retaining the light fixture that's in the photograph, or are you putting something else in?
We haven't really decided on that yet. The light will remain. We don't know if the fixture will remain. We may update the fixture, but there will still be a light.
I can say that if there's additional changes to the exterior of the building that require Landmarks Commission review, we'll talk to the owner about that, and we'll move forward as appropriate.
So I have one question, Ruben, just kind of a procedural one. I see that we have a comment here from Mr. Van at the Department of Archaeology and Historical Preservation.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's because the building is on the state register as well. And I was just wondering, I don't recall seeing something like this in any of our other design reviews, and I was just kind of curious about the process.
I can
comment on that. So as part of the licensing process for any new brewery, the TTB, which is the Trade and Tobacco Tax Bureau, who oversees all alcohol permitting, as part of the initial process in trying to get approval is that if you're in a historic building, they require a letter from the State Historic Society that says that the operations will not affect the building itself. So before we could even apply to get a license, we had to have that letter,
okay,
which is why Mr. Van was involved.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Would someone like to entertain a motion?
I recommend approval of the new door and transom at 615 Commerce Street, Old City Hall Annex. Is it Old City Hall Annex?
Yes.
As submitted.
Second.
And moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion. Motion passes. Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much.
Check with Ruben.
I'll have a written decision for you in a couple of days. In the meantime, you can proceed with any permitting. I'll be in contact with Jennifer Ward, still the keeper.
That's correct.
So I'll let her know. And just to clarify, that was Steele made the motion, and Elquist was the second. Okay. So we'll be in contact. Thank you.
Great. Thank
when
you very
are you
much.
Opening?
Pardon me?
When are you opening?
That depends on how fast we get that permit. we're shooting for an April opening.
Great.
Good
Thank
luck.
You, everybody.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Item 4B, 720 Pacific, application for art installation. Do we have anybody here? Want to come up and have a seat at the table here? Join us.
Thank you.
Ruben, can you give us your report?
Then I believe there's also a, you have the application back in front of you. There's also going to be a presentation. This is approximately at 720 Pacific Avenue. This is not a going to be on a building, so it's this is more or less in front of that area within the Old City Hall Historic District. This is a proposed art installation of a sculpture in the district as a component of the Pacific Avenue Streetscape Project. The installation will consist of a 48-inch round sculpture within an area that was recently resurfaced as part of the streetscape near the pedestrian crosswalks at South 18th Pacific. If you've been down there, there's the big Euro cobble crosswalk installation right in the heart of the district. This installation will occur within the city right-of-way and will not affect any historic fabric. It is part of a series of sculptures to be installed within the project area, but this is the only one that is within the historic district boundaries. The sculptures will be cast in concrete with the color treatment, and the stainless rod will connect the sculptures to the ground with an epoxy adhesive. The attachments have been designed and stamped by a structural engineer, and final design of the sculptures was reviewed and approved by the City's Arts Commission on October 14th of last year. The requested action before the Commission is approval of the concept and location of the sculpture. The Secretary of the Interior Standards that sort of apply to this in a sense. There's not many standards that apply directly to art installation, but that new additions related or adjacent new construction shall be undertaken in a manner that if removed in the future, the essential form and integrity of the historic property and its environment would be unimpaired. Staff's analysis, this is within the Old City Hall Historic District, and as such, alterations to the appearance of public rights away on other public spaces requires the Landmarks Commission's approval. The proposal will not directly affect any historic structures. The sculpture design was reviewed and approved by the Arts Commission on October 14th, 2013. And if removed, the character of the district shall remain unchanged, and staff recommends approval of the proposal as submitted.
Thank you, Ruben. I couldn't have said it better myself. So I'm Amy McBride. I'm the arts administrator for the city. And I'm really here to introduce Elizabeth Connor, who's the project artist, because I would like her to present to you some of the context and some specifics about this particular piece and as it relates to the rest of the streetscape. So I'm going to scooch to that side.
Get out of the front.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. Green Flash is the overall concept for artwork for Pacific Avenue, and how many of you have seen it? That's the other thing that's really interesting. It's a little bit of a mythological phenomenon that actually does exist. I used to work on ships, and so I've seen the Green Flash. Under certain atmospheric conditions, if you're on or near the water, and this happens on the Pacific side of the United States, when the sun goes just beyond, below the horizon, there'll be this very brilliant flash of green. Sometimes when it's a little bit of a bright overcast or a little bit of haze, it's easier to see. So that concept related for me to Pacific Avenue, because it is Pacific Avenue, and Tacoma itself actually looks towards and across the Pacific, both culturally and economically. We looked at the green seemed like a really appropriate color because the whole project is provoked by stormwater issues, and there are a lot of stormwater issues that have been mitigated and solved through this streetscape renovation, through the rain gardens that are associated with the project, and part of the challenge of developing artwork for this long stretch of the streetscape, all the way from the historic district to just short of the Tacoma Art Museum, was to find some elements that would help tie that whole streetscape together and also be delightful and surprising. The green flash is a very intermittent and ephemeral phenomenon, so as you walk down Pacific Avenue, which is being encouraged by the recent renovations, out of the corner of your eye, you'll see some tiles that line the rain gardens, and they vary in color as you proceed from north to south. It's the chartreuse closer to the art museum. Oops. So there are some of the sculptures installed already, 19 as a matter of fact, that are associated with the rain gardens. So this gives you an idea of how the sculptures and the tiles relate to each other. And I like the contractor's purple gloves in that photograph. This is a smaller sculpture. They were all installed by a crane, and so this is an installation shot and how it looks with the plants surrounding it. These the sculptures that have already been installed are intended to be colorful and noticed within the streetscape. They're also spherical, which is a little bit like the sun setting. They're lower than the grade of the street, so often you can just catch a glimpse of a sphere that seems like it's either rising or setting in the environment. They are inspired by some of the plants that are planted in the rain gardens, which actually enhance stormwater treatment, and they could also be looked at as seeds or other organic kinds of objects in the street. Another strategy for knitting the streetscape together as part of this project was to look at areas where there wasn't a lot of new visual interest based on the fact that the sidewalk had been recently replaced or for other reasons. So you'll see the red dot indicates the location in question that Ruben pointed out. That's the location of the single sculpture we're talking about this evening. And there are five more on the same side of the street, including sculptures that are adjacent to the former Luzon site. So I actually poached from Artifacts' report for this. What I was looking for to provide a complement and a contrast with the more organic nature of the spheres that are in the rain gardens, I wanted something that was on the sidewalk for these six sidewalk-located sculptures to relate more to surrounding architecture. And this is architecture that no longer exists, except the fact that the artifacts still do exist, including some of these. This photographic representation. You see on the right-hand side of that image a very architectural and repetitive pattern that I was interested in. I was looking for more symmetrical and regular patterning, rhythmic patterns that would look good on a sphere. So some of these will be showing up on the street-related sculptures. Low relief, about a half an inch off the surface of each sphere. This is a railing detail, and here are some of the images from the inventory that are inspiring patterns that will circle these spheres. Fortunately, there's still a lot of really wonderful architectural details that can be seen in life-size on the streetscape these days, and so I'm also riffing on these a bit. Obviously, there are some wonderful details right within this historic district. This is Amy standing in the location of where we're proposing a 48-inch sphere. So she's sort of leaning against it. I'm pretending that she's leaning against that sphere. They're sized for leaning. They're larger than the spheres that are within the rain gardens. The rain gardens' largest sphere is 30 inches, and the largest sphere on the sidewalk will be 52 inches. So they really do. They are getting larger in scale. We weren't interested in people necessarily climbing on them. That may happen, but they're larger to kind of discourage sitting. And in your packet, you'll see a model of the pattern that I'm proposing for this particular sphere, and it's based on the egg and dart motif that is really classical, and shows up way high up on the old City Hall if you squint with binoculars. Look up there. So I'm pulling that detail from this particular neighborhood to use on that sphere. And this is a 48-inch sphere. And that is it. And I'd love to hear any questions you might have.
What was the color for this particular sphere? Is it the red and green?
That model is a brighter red than I think it will actually be on the final one. I'm looking at something that tends a little more neutral towards a reddish purple. And one of the things that was discovered as we actually put color on the spheres that are in the rain gardens is that we didn't need quite as much color contrast. I was interested in what would show up within the rain gardens, because the foliage is just running riot, and it's going to get even larger and more
fecund.
Good point. It's thriving. So it's one of the reasons that the design involved a sphere, something with a fair amount of mass, and I thought that color contrast would need to be much more blatant. And it's not necessary. I'll probably use another color that's closer to that reddish purple on this one. One of the reasons that not necessary is that these are concrete, and so the surface actually picks up light and shadow really wonderfully. So those forms are really visible even when the colors are closer to each other. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
So these new works will sit right on the brick. They won't have any vegetation surrounding them like
Yeah, and that's another reason to have a very regular pattern rather than the more organic freeform patterns that we have on the ones in the rain gardens, because it's a different relationship. It's a relationship to hardscape rather than plant materials. They'll have a bit of a flat bottom for stability, but they'll still look very spherical.
Will all the sculptures on the sidewalks, the hardscape sculptures, be the same?
No, they'll have different repeating.
So patterns. We're just approving one of the six or whatever.
Yeah. And I'm definitely looking at some of the patterns that show up in the Luzon inventory for some of the ones that are adjacent to that site.
So all the sidewalk spheres will have architectural detail versus the more organic botanical rain garden ones.
Yes.
So in total, we're talking about five, or there will possibly be more in the future?
In total, there will be six.
Six.
If you approve this one in the Old City Hall District.
Okay.
And you said they're 48 to 52 inches as far as size goes?
They are
30-something.
Sorry, 3'6" up to 4'8". So
the
42 to 42 to 52.
This one's
48. This is right in the
middle. I'm glad to see that you increase the size, especially for these ones, because this one of the things, like, looking back at the project, you know, being on the Arts Commission, it was like some of the ones that are in the rain gardens kind of get lost in the rain gardens a little bit. So I'm glad to see that, you know, at least your art will be a little bit more visible, you know, from the street.
One of that's an interesting comment too, because one of the things that we're encouraging people who are adopting the rain gardens to do is to do just a little bit of trimming back. But in some cases, there's so much infrastructure below the surface of the rain gardens that we could only go we went as large as we could for every single one of the rain gardens, but they're tighter spaces than we anticipated.
You showed the location quite clearly for this one. Where would the other five be?
They are. Oops, just passed it. So those are the locations. The green dots are outside of the historic district, and the red one is inside the historic district. So we picked areas where it needed some visual interest. Either there wasn't a rain garden there, or there was a long stretch of sidewalk without much else. In several cases, there was a stretch of the Pacific Avenue that just had a new sidewalk, and so there was no point in ripping it up as part of the streetscape renovation, but we could actually install something on top of that new sidewalk. The two dots that are to the left of the red one are the garage, which is vastly improved with what's happened with the streetscape. There are plant materials out in front of it, and we felt that space, which was somewhat problematic to begin with, and it's gotten a lot better. It's much more comfortable as a pedestrian to walk by there now, and so we thought we'll make it even more pleasant and have some sculptures there as well.
What's the completion date for the rest of the sculptures?
February.
Isn't there a slide that shows the location of the rain garden installations? I thought that one of the initial slides you had showed where the other rain garden was.
No, I didn't actually bring one of those. The rain gardens are pretty much everywhere, except for, if you look everywhere but where these dots are, that's where a lot of the rain gardens are. But there are four rain gardens in the historic district, I believe. Sorry, didn't bring that one.
What was the slide previous to this one with the...
Oh, I'm sorry. I completely lied. Wait. You're right. There they are. Thank you. So those are all the rain gardens. And A and B, yeah, it's pretty clear. The street numbers are at the top of this image.
So will all the hardscape sculptures be more subtle in color than the ones in the rain garden?
They'll be visible. They'll be richly colored. I'm not going towards pastels, but we want them to be visible. We want to be able to, for someone walking down the street, to actually make a connection as you walk down the street and actually see them from across the street, see them from a distance as well as from walking right by them. So I wouldn't say they'll be more subtle. They'll be more in keeping with the palette of the buildings that are adjacent.
Okay,
so
I guess that's what I'm getting at.
That's where that reddish color will be an interesting thing to actually manage, because it's not a plum color. It's more like brick, but we also are not looking at a tomato either.
Right.
On that note, you mentioned the one adjacent to the Luzon. You're gonna take motifs from that.
Yeah.
Have you identified kind of motifs for the other ones?
Some of the other ones, I'm looking at adjacent, some patterns, very simple vertical, series of vertical elements on adjacent buildings. There are also some floral elements, and there are several repeating squares and triangles that show up on adjacent buildings. So, looking at a combination of those, and they'll work as you know they'll work in the same way the egg and dart does, which is that they'll surround
the
sphere in a graceful way. I'm not looking at something that's going to look like it's interrupting that. That's circular.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the parking garage and what motif you'd take from the parking garage.
I think I'm going to look across the street, as a matter of fact, that one.
Any other comments or questions, either for Amy or for Ms. Connor?
I'd just like to say that I appreciate the thoughtfulness that goes into this, being outside the rain garden and taking the motif from the architectural context. It's a thoughtful process.
Thank you.
Will these be stained, the concrete?
They are. It's actually a hybrid acrylic admixture that can be put into a concrete coating. So it looks more like stucco.
Okay.
It's a smooth stucco. I've gotten into trouble with Amy. I said stucco. She said, no, not that rough stuff. No, it's a smooth stucco treatment. And then they will all, once the weather gets a little warmer and drier, they'll all have a very good penetrating sealer that also heightens the color.
Sweet.
So right now they're kind of efflorescing.
They are.
Looking great.
Yeah.
But they're not done yet. We have to wait for the weather changes.
And then have we had any defacing of the, I mean, I'm just thinking in terms of being able to maintain them.
I haven't seen any, and I've looked recently.
Okay.
There's been a little bit of walking on top
stepping
of them.
Yeah.
In the rain gardens. I actually think that activity is probably going to diminish.
So if they are tagged, they're easy to clean? That's, I guess, my question.
Very easily cleaned.
Great.
They're both easily cleaned, and they're,
topic,
they're easily recoated as well.
Great.
It's
great. Is it a sacrificial coating?
It's not a sacrificial coating, but there are products that can be used to remove tagging on top of the sealant. The other, if it's scratched into, that same hybrid concrete admixture can be coat, which is unusual. It's something that was developed actually in the Seattle area first. They use it for countershops. This particular product is called Milestone, and you can just paint it back on again. It's pretty amazing.
And I'm sorry, I may have missed it, but are the artists local, or are they created locally, or?
Well, I'm the project artist for the design, and I've worked with local artists to actually do the fabrication and the decoration, for want of better word, the coatings.
Local as in regional, so Elizabeth's from Vashon. And
okay.
May as well be to come as annex, right?
Yeah.
Annex.
It's about an artist community. Any other comments? Can we entertain a motion?
I would move that the Landmarks Preservation Commission approve the sculpture installation at approximately 720 Pacific Avenue as proposed.
I'd second that.
By Mr. Ron, seconded by Mr. Jensen. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you very much. Thank you for bringing it in.
Thank you. Thanks for the questions, too.
Officer nomination. Do you remember this part?
Sure, I can take over. So I don't have a very lengthy staff report. Just I can say that the Landmarks Commission bylaws indicate that the officers shall be nominated at the first meeting in December, and elections held at the following meeting. New officers assume their duties at the meeting following the election. Commission elected. I shouldn't say elected, that's ambiguous, decided not to put a slate of nominees forward at the December meeting, December 18th, because there were a number of new commissioners, and it was felt that it would be better to postpone, suspend the bylaws and postpone the nomination until this meeting. So as far as procedure is concerned, it's my thought that the nomination will occur this meeting, and then following that, if there is any vote needed, then that would occur on the 22nd. Now the general rules of order, you know, if there's a slate that's nominated and the nominees are willing to serve and there's no buddy running in opposition, there's no need for a vote necessarily. By acclamation, but at any rate, so at this time, I think that if there's any questions, I can certainly try to answer them. It's your key to immense power and influence. I'm going to make it a little bit of a pitch, though, because I do think that we do have an exciting year coming up. There are a number of things that are going to come to the commission, a district, we're going to be in a little bit of uncharted territory. I think we're going to be working more on public outreach and events. I think there's an opportunity for someone who has some ideas about how they want the commission to fulfill its role and to how some of these things unfold, I think it's an opportunity. And so that's my pitch. And as always, I'll do everything I can to support the officers of the commission to ensure the smooth running and the excellent customer service this commission provides. So with that, I will conclude my remarks. I'll answer any questions if folks have any.
There's no staff recommendations.
I have got to maintain my cordial relationship with each and every one of you. I would not do that to somebody. I do have, like I said, I think that the key is, conduct of the meetings. There's a generalized order of business. Most people are familiar with it. The ability to some degree to sense when the discussions, the tempo of the discussion and moderating it. Then obviously there's a chance to communicate on behalf of the commission when the commission takes a position on things, that sort of thing. So it is important that the person that is the chair is willing to be the chair. And the vice chair, because the vice chair is important because many times the chair cannot be someplace. So.
From 10,000 feet, I can see that you're a very busy person throughout the year, and if you're saying that the next year is going to be busy, are you going to have an assistant? And tell us about that and what.
Will there be notes?
There will be minutes. There will be notes. Yes, there will be staff. We have a vacancy. We're going to be doing some program development, and we have a vacancy currently, and that will be staffed up, and I think we'll actually be at a higher level of staffing than we've been previously, but we're not quite there yet. And so there's a little bit of keeping it together, trying not to send people on the agenda to the wrong venue for the meeting, if anybody noticed that. But yes, I mean, it's going to be a busy year, and I think that it's going to be, I think there's some chances to implement some of the things that are laid out in the preservation plan, but there will be staff support. There will be more staff support than there is now, and we will be, announcing some of those things, I think, in the not too far off future. So I don't know the exact dates yet.
And last time there was a clarification that that the ex officios are eligible for service in these roles.
I think that's a biased interpretation.
I'd like to restate that.
They are eligible.
As I feel our ex officios are also the most qualified.
Well, if this is one of the rare occasions where ex officios can make motions, I'd be happy to nominate based on his extensive knowledge of historic preservation, construction, and rehabilitation techniques, as well as his knowledge of historic preservation rules and regulations, and his sterling performance tonight as interim chair.
Well, thank you for that.
You need a second, or is that?
I think these are just nominations.
Just nominations at this point.
So the other one is the vice chair to assist.
And other nominations for chair, too.
Please!
That's why we waited.
Well, I wanted to say that, certainly think you would make an excellent choice for chair, for myself, I thought seriously about whether to
take an officer's role here. And I just wanted to point out that while I have been on the commission for a while, as the ex officio for the North Slope, probably over 50% of the design reviews that we do here on the commission are regarding the North Slope. And so I'd have to not chair, I think, just out of form, when we had one of those design reviews come up before the commission. So
not chair and not vote, because chair and running the committee, I think, would be completely separate.
Well, I think that's true, but I also have to comment on the during the design reviews for the design reviews that come up from the North
Slope. You represent the population of the North Slope.
Yeah. So in that sense, I think it would be unseemly, maybe not illegal or you know, violate the buyer laws or anything, but I think it would be unseemly for the chair to, in that position, to be essentially telling the commission, no, don't go do this. but we might be able to work around that.
Despite what Mr. McClintock said, I think that he would be an excellent nominee.
There is a little bit of confusion. I mean, the ex officio, there's nothing in the bylaws that says the ex officio can't be an officer. There's nothing that says that. There is a provision that says, and this is clearing up something, I think, and this is like a hybrid Roberts rules thing. I mean, like in a constitutional crisis down here, but that the chair, it says, notwithstanding Roberts rules of order, the chair shall vote on all resolutions and motions. And so I don't know if that, by as an ex officio position, and maybe people can enlighten me here, by definition doesn't vote. So maybe that clause is okay, that the chair, if elected, is not a non-voting. But
or by electing him chair, does he then get promoted to a position of being a voter?
I think that then that would be an example of the bylaws or Robert's Rules of Order superseding the city ordinance, which I don't think we can do.
Gotcha. What is the intention of ex officios not voting? Just so I
they're to comment on the interests of the historic district, and so to provide input to the commission on matters that affect those historic districts. That's there's I suppose there's reasons you could state they would or wouldn't vote, but really I think for the most part it's because their role is technically limited to being advisory to the commission on those specific historic district matters.
And they live in those districts, I think.
You live a property owner or a business owner. I mean, technically, the downtown could petition to have an ex officio for Old City Hall Historic District. Union Station could have one as well. There hasn't been that interest, mostly because I think a lot of neighborhood issues come up with, like, especially the North Slope, that are profoundly affected by Landmarks Commission decisions. And so I mean, those could be revised to be made voting positions. I mean, they have a different term length, they're longer, and so on. So that there's a little bit of ambiguity, I think, here, and also there's sort of the way the commission just kind of operates, but that's sort of the background of that. I believe we have a nomination of Commissioner York as for chair, I believe.
Maybe I'm crazy, but I'll put my name in for either chair or vice chair.
Yes. I support that nomination because I think it's beneficial to have someone who understands the policy in one of those roles, because it's something that I think, I speak for myself, struggle with at times, is understanding the protocol and understanding nomination processes and things like that, and I think you're very good at that, so I think it would be very beneficial.
I do get paid to do that, so...
It's your job. Might as well make it your hobby, too.
Then it's settled.
Yeah.
Maybe they could arm wrestle to see who gets chair.
I could defer to the senior.
Oh, I think you're
qualified. If no one else has anything to say, I'll be glad to make a motion to close nomination. to close nominations and to elect Duke York as chair and Kate as vice chair by acclamation.
You can remember this, Ross.
I think Duke will do a great job.
Be great, Duke.
If there's no other candidates on the slate, then as my understanding, there is no vote needed. Because there's...
Perfect.
All right. So then we have, for our next meeting, we have Commissioner York, Chair York, and Vice Chair Chase.
Yay! All right. Thanks for having us.
That's what you guys get for sitting so close.
I know.
I just have a couple of business items. Really briefly, I want to let the commission know that I believe we have a room conflict for the next meeting, and I promise that we're not going to be moving around as much as we've been doing lately. But we have the Charter Review Committee that has a schedule conflict with this room. They've been hunting around the building, seeking out spots all day long. And I think we're going to end up going to conference room 434 next week, or next meeting on the 22nd. I'll try to find us. I think this room's a pretty busy room. People seem to like it. So we used to be in room conference 16 before. So I'll try to see it. I'm going to see if there's going to be more conflicts like this and try to find a more permanent solution. But this is our regular meeting room, so if you don't hear anything in opposition, this is where we meet. But next meeting will be on 434. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is I just wanted to let you know that we do have a couple of nominations that are coming in to the pipeline. We have one that is for the City Stables building. Submitted by Historic Tacoma, is currently under review. I haven't determined a schedule for it yet. It's owned by the city, and there are some things that we have to account for when a property is nominated by somebody other than the owner. The second thing is that we also have a proposal in to create a conservation district in the West Slope neighborhood. That's going to be a big review. It's a 130-page long application, and so that's currently under review. I think that I'm going to try to set it up for a briefing. I may not be able to do that, but I'm going to try to do it by the 22nd. West Loop. And so it's roughly an area that is bounded by Jackson on the east, Mountain View Drive, I think, on the west, 6th to the north, and South 19th, although they have a couple of platted additions that they're adding to that. They're proposing an administrative design review conservation district, basically. And so we'll talk more about that. But that's just to give you a heads up. Some of the exciting things we have coming up. That is all I have for now. I just want to let people know.
So I thought I'd mention that the central school, the administration building, has been put on the National Register now. They got that announcement recently. So that's... And there'll be one of the other schools, and I think McCarver is kind of in the process, but we haven't heard back from that, so that's kind of interesting news. I was also going to ask you if you had any kind of update on the Old City Hall.
I don't have much of an update. I can tell you that the roofers are on the building. They have one side of the roof installed. That was actually good news because there was a lot of time that passed between them putting on the ice and water membrane on there to now. What I heard was they actually had material on order, and I don't know if it had something to do with the color or what, but they're now up there and they're installing it. So the building has been theoretically anyways watertight since they put that ice and water shield down, but it won't last forever, especially in high wind. And so it's nice to see that now they've got the cladding up. I'm not sure exactly what their status is on their on the concerns of the masonry. Just to fill everybody in, Old City Hall is under dangerous buildings enforcement action with the city. We have a stipulated order for them to make certain repairs to the building. The most pressing one was the fact that the Northeast Tower was leaking, and it's been leaking for a while. And so the potential for long-term damage was really our primary concern there. Back in 2010, the building, they shut off the heat to the building, and during the cold snap we had in Thanksgiving, during the Thanksgiving holiday, it caused a sprinkler main to blow at the top of the building. And so we had about 30,000 gallons of water go through the building. That was, they thankfully had an active insurance on it, so they were able to abate everything. They got the water out of there. They also, at the time, then removed most of the, drywall, the electrical system, other things like that. So the building, when the city took the building, dangerous building action on it, it was because of the roof that was failing, and also because there were some masonry pieces that were ending up on the sidewalk below the building during high wind and high rain events. And what we think was going on was that there's a secondary boiler chimney up there that they had removed some bricks from, and there's a lot of other really loose mortar up there. And so what was happening is the wind would blow these bricks off, and they'd hydroplane off the edge. And they were common brick. There's some worry that they were actually the face brick of the building, that the actual face mason was failing, but it's actually a chimney liner. And so they have to knock some of that back down. It's not really a visible part of the building. And then the other thing is that the building right now is not adequately fire protected. And because it does not have active plumbing or power in the building, there's no sprinkler system that's been active in the building. And for a six-story building downtown, you cannot have that. So right now they're under orders to have a fire watch for the fire department and also secure the building. Our main concern with fire in this particular season is that transients will get into the building and build a fire because it's cold outside. And so they're working with the fire department to create a plan to secure the building. And to this point, what it looks like they're going to do is secure by putting barriers on the inside of the window. So if people were to break a window, they still can't get into the building. And then have a periodic fire watch. I don't know exactly what the frequency is. It's probably going to be a couple times a day. And but they're doing the roof work currently. And so those are the main things. There's some other things, I think, that are also code items. There's a list of things they have to take care of with a certain time period. But those are the things that are occurring now. And so I don't have an update on the fire or the brick, but I can tell you that the roofers have been up there for the past 2 days.
And the totem pole?
The totem pole, I have a request for a project update on that. I understand that the public works staff is meeting in the next, day or two, I think. And they said they would give me an update at that point. So.
Great, thanks.
Any other comments? We're adjourned.